Integrity, a Hope Center Harlem motivational podcast.
Beautiful day, Hope Center family. I am J.U. Jones, your professor of positivity, that person that helps you live life and believe in possible, one post, event, or podcast at a time. And yes, this right here is worthy. Your motivational podcast brought to you by Hope Center Harlem, a free mental wellness space that offers a host of free therapy and wellness resources. Learn more today at www.hopecenterharlem.org. That is hopecenterharlem.org. Listen, I'm so excited to bring in this episode. Once again, Worthy is your motivational podcast whose motivational interviews run 10 to 18 minutes every fourth Monday of the month. We do this so that you can listen, get your motivation through the stories of others, and get on with your day. It's all about helping you rather than lecturing you. So, our guest for today has more than 15 years of experience in the nonprofit arena, ranging from working with New York City entrepreneurs in microlending programs to working with young people as a counselor, mentor, and tutor. Students of life, are you ready to meet Arva Rice, the president and CEO of the New York Urban League? Well, I am. Arva, how are you today?
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. I have to tell you, I am a bit fatigued. I have been traveling a lot lately in the country and internationally, but I am feeling positive and hopeful.
Positive, hopeful, but fatigued. I'm happy that you're here with us today, ready to talk about being worthy and ready to talk about a story. So thank you so much for going ahead and sharing how you're feeling. And I am going to just shoot us right into the segment today. As you're already aware, Worthy is a podcast where guests share their stories of working through struggles and then bouncing back from that setback. It's all about inspiring the students of life, as I call them, to live lives of fullness, right? While seeing that we are not alone in the struggles that we go through on a daily basis. So before I start in this moment, I want to set the stage and just ask you, who are you? Go ahead and tell them, who are you?
I am Arva Rice, president and CEO of the New York Urban League. I am a sister. I am an auntie of four beautiful nieces and a nephew. I am a loyal friend. I'm a baker, and I am also a Harlemite.
Okay, Baker, so if I have to come over to the house and get some red velvet or something, please don't be angry. Let's keep moving.
I'm there for you. I'm there for you.
Hold on. Cream cheese icing or no?
Cream cheese icing, of course.
Most definitely. Okay, as long as we're not doing that buttercream stuff, I'm happy. Let's keep moving. Oh, and so let's talk about your Harlem story. So Harlemite?
Well, I have to tell you, I was not raised in Harlem, but I did get here as soon as I can.
Okay.
I was raised in the Midwest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My parents were part of the Great Migration. They moved from the South to the North to build a better life for their kids and wanted all of their kids to attend college, which we did. When I was in my senior year of college, one of my best friends came to me and said, "Do you want to apply for this fellowship program in New York City?" Well, you have to remember, you know, I'm of a certain age. And so when I was thinking about New York City, my thoughts were of John Travolta when he was in the sitcom Welcome Back, Kotter. So I thought the question was, do you want to move to New York City and hang out with the Sweat Hogs? Well, I didn't really want to live there, but the idea of going to visit was appealing. So when I looked at the application, down at the bottom in little small letters, it said any finalists would be flown to New York City at the expense of the program. And so I said, fine, I'll fly to New York, visit, and that'll be it. Well, came out to New York City, found out it was an amazing program, was accepted, moved here. It's 30 years later, and I now like to think of myself as a Harlemite.
Look, you are. We always say after 7 years, you're one of us because you literally pick up every piece of our beautiful mess. So let's keep going down the story. So we came to Harlem, we did our thing, and then tell me about this New York Urban League story. How did we move into this place?
Well, I've always worked in the nonprofit arena, and the Urban League was just an organization that I had amazing respect and admiration for. At the time, I lived in Brooklyn, and I would go to the address on 1351 Dean Street. And that was where the Urban League's office was. And at the time, I thought it was its only office, not realizing it was the one in Brooklyn. And there was a couple of gentlemen there who were starting a hip hop credit union. And I would go there for meetings and conversation. And I thought, wow, there's this organization that's providing a home for this incubated project of these young men. And thought, wow, the Urban League is just the coolest thing ever. And then had an opportunity to not meet Dennis Walcott, but I would see him on television. And I would hear the work that he was doing and the impact that he was making for African Americans in the city. And I said to myself, one day when I'm really grown, I would love to be able to run the Urban League.
I love it. And so if I may be very blunt and ask, how many women have been president of the New York Urban League?
I am the second woman to run the Urban League in its 104-year history. The first was a woman named Harriet Michelle, who was amazing, and I am the second. So around the movement, so the Urban League is one of 90 Urban Leagues around the country, and there was a point in place in time where all of the Urban League CEOs were males, like 100%. There was a movement to bring in the first generation of women leaders, and that happened in probably the late 1970s was when they brought in the first round of women. And since that time, the Urban League movement is almost 50-50 in terms of African-American women and men who run Urban Leagues.
We love progress. Did you ever have any moments where you felt your voice wasn't respected in those spaces because of who you are?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely were. As I mentioned, I'm from the Midwest, and so I'm very polite, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people mistake my politeness for being a pushover.
Right? Speak on it.
And so just because I say yes and please doesn't mean that anything goes, right? And so I think that has certainly been one of the challenges.
So becoming the second president that is a woman for the New York Urban League, that must mean, in my point of view, that there was a happy family unit that was standing behind you saying, go, Arva, go.
So my family was extremely excited when I became the president of the Urban League. I'll never forget, my father called me. And let's be clear, my father was an individual who I mentioned moved from the South to the North in order to send all of his kids to college, ran a construction company. And so basically his uniform was Timberlands before they were fashionable, but you actually wore them, you know, for function. When I called my parents and I said, you know, I've gone through this whole process. It took me almost 6 months interviewing to become the CEO of the Urban League. But that's another podcast. First thing that came out of his mouth was, that's terrific. You're going to have to buy new clothes. So they definitely thought that I would need to show up differently as the CEO of the Urban League than I had in any of my other nonprofit roles that I had. But they're extremely supportive. Listened to all my stories, provided advice, suggestions, support. When I would send them something, I have a meeting with this person, I need your prayers, would be right there with me. And they have been an incredible support to me throughout the journey.
I love it. So throughout the journey, life happened. And if we could talk about that moment where you lost a bit of worth, lost a bit of self, lost a bit of that momentum.
Yeah. So I found out while I was at the Urban League, I'd been there at that point about 5 years and found out that my father was diagnosed with cancer. And at the time, we knew that he had cancer, we meaning our family, and that we wanted him to, you know, go into, you know, through cancer treatments. And somehow my father had always been this person. I never known him to go to the hospital. He never missed work. He just seemed almost an indestructible person. And so we just figured that he would, you know, go through chemo and radiation, all those sorts of things, but that he would be fine. It never occurred to us that there would be a different ending to my father's journey.
I can see here that it's a bit hard. If we could just dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, so he started to go through chemotherapy, and that was rough. It was primarily my mom and my brother. They were in Texas at the time. So I was away from them. One of the hardest parts was that I was in a fellowship at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was on one of the fellowship trips, and I got a phone call that my father had collapsed and he had gone into the hospital. Mm-hmm. And they had incubated him. And I remember having to call my sister and tell her, you know, daddy's incubated. I'm sure he'll be fine. Once again, still, I'm sure he'll be fine, but we need to go there. And at the time I was in DC, she was here in New York, and we were calling, trying to get together to get these airplane tickets and trip together. At the time she was pregnant with my nephew, who is now 8 years old. And so God stepped in, and the flight that we could get that got us there the most quickly, even though I was leaving from DC and she was leaving from New York, we ended up meeting somewhere in the middle and flew together to Texas in order to go be with my dad. He was in that coma for about a little bit over a week, and then the doctors made the final decision that he wasn't going to recover, and we had to essentially pull the plug, and that was the end of his life.
Understood. My sincerest condolences. And so as we breathe for a minute here, I feel something bigger in the moment. In this moment, what is that, Arva?
You know, my dad was larger than life, and I still miss him every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that...
It's okay.
I think that people don't deal with death very well, right? They send you a sympathy card, or they tell you that they're sorry, but life goes on and you continue to have to go to work or have to interact and move through life. And then you don't have the moment to actually stop and reflect and be sad.
Yeah.
And so it's the sadness that comes out still when I talk about it.
Understood. If you could honor the sadness in this moment and give one word that the heart says, what would that one word say outside of the word sadness?
I'd say miss you.
Miss you. Thank you for sharing that story. As you said, many times we don't know how someone else is dealing, or even how we will personally deal with a situation when someone that is extremely close to us, one of those cheerleaders for us, that person that's always in the rafters for us, passes. If you could speak to the little girl that lives inside of you, and talk her through this moment
to give her some motivation,
what would you tell her to try to help her?
I think it's just to reflect on the times that I did have with my father, the advice that he gave, the steady hand that he was for all of us. Yeah. After my father passed, I feel like I didn't take the appropriate amount or level or moments for healing and kind of push through some of the decisions that I made immediately following his passing are probably the most questionable ones I've ever made. And so I think that I would tell that person early on that, you know, you're not going to have your father forever. So cherish him, spend as much time with him as you can. And then also that realize that when he's gone, that you're going to need to give yourself some grace.
Grace. There's something magical and beautiful about the word grace. Whether we're extending it to ourselves, extending it to our company, the coworkers, colleagues, or even extending it to family. Grace is that elixir in life that sometimes gives us the air
to continue to move,
the wings to continue to fly, and the clouds to continue to float on. Arva, thank you so much for sharing that moment with us. And my heart hugs you in this moment digitally, because I can see how hard that was. But the great news in that is that does it get 100% better ever? The answer is no. But does it get lighter each time we work through the moment? Each time we feel the moment, each time we give ourselves the time to say, this moment right now, I'm going to hear myself, feel myself, see myself as myself during that time? The answer is yes. As we casually shift a bit more, let's think to the now, using this story as a guide. And we'll do something that I love to do with all of our guests, where they say, I am worthy, ... Go ahead and exclaim to the world, universe, yourself, and even your father, how you are worthy, ...
I am worthy because I am God's daughter and Billy Rice's daughter, worthy of grace, unconditional love, and compassion.
Grace, unconditional love, and compassion. If you could just hug yourself in this moment as I'm going to hug myself, pretending to hug you across this screen, across this table.
Thank you. I love you.
Thank you so much for being here with us today. I truly appreciate you. And I know that some of the students of life will indeed learn and be and continue to grow and shimmy and shake through this story. If there's anything that you would like to say to the students of life as we end today, go ahead.
I encourage the students of life to know that we all doubt ourselves at some point along the way. It's natural. but to repeat that we're worthy and that we're worthy of grace, and that it is so important for us to push ourselves, whether it's, you know, moving to New York City, not ever having seen the place before, or whatever the jump or the push is in their lives, but to go ahead and do that, because I know that you're going to be incredibly successful.
I thank you so much for being here with us today, Arva. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Students of life, my dear students, it was such a magical moment, a gift even, to meet the president and CEO of the New York Urban League, who showed us that glass ceilings are meant to be broken with your dreams, while reminding us that there is no magical prescription for grief and death. The key is to continue to offer up yourself grace. Grace in the time of need. Grace no matter the moment. Grace no matter the place or circumstance. Grace. Each of you know that the professor loves a good quote, and Anne Larnell said it best when she said, "I do not at all understand the mystery of grace, only that it meets us where we are, but does not leave us where it found us." As we close out today, I have to scream thank you. Thank you for listening to Worthy, a Hope Center Harlem motivational podcast. I am J.U. Jones, your professor of positivity, signing out, reminding each of you that you are indeed worthy no matter what you go through and no matter how long it takes. Never forget that. And as I close today, I have to continue to say it. I love you. I love you for who you are, and I love us for where we're going. Class dismissed.